Welcome to another edition of ECAC Hockey Decision Maker. I am thrilled today to be joined by Julie Chu, the head coach of the Concordia Stingers, but to be fair, a proud ECAC member of the Hartford Crimson. Julie, so nice to visit with you.
Thanks so much, Pierre. I'm excited to get a chance to chat today.
We've chatted a lot over the years, five times. I mean, I think about the world championships. You're a five-time gold medalist. I think about all the Olympics I had a chance to cover you in 02, 06, 10, 14. Like, that's a lot. So I've seen your body of work quite a bit. And I just want to know, like, you're a young lady. You grew up in Fairfield, Connecticut. You go to Chote Rosemary Hall. And then you leave and you go to Northwood. Did you leave because of hockey? Did you leave because it was just not a good fit at Chote? Because I know that helped establish where you were in the hockey world after you left Chote.
Yeah, so actually the reason I went to Northwood, and I actually just went there for a little exchange for the year, I still ended up graduating at Chote. I absolutely loved my experience. I grew up in Connecticut. It was my first experience living away from home, and what an environment and resources at my fingertips. But actually, in my senior year, I had the chance to play full-time with the national team. They had a full-time residency program in Lake Placid, New York, from September all the way through the World Championships in April. And so over that summer, or I guess the previous World Championships, I had gotten cut from that team, kind of out of nowhere, was invited to try out. I didn't belong yet. And after that, the head coach at the time, Ben Smith, reached out to myself and said, "Hey, like, I'd like you to join our full-time residency program the next year in Lake Placid." And I was like, "Absolutely, this is a dream. I'm in." And my parents are like, "No." And I was like, "Wait, what? Like, what do you mean no? Like, this is my chance to like live a dream." And they said, like, "You're a senior in high school and you have to graduate. Like, so that's the only way we can do it." So I wasn't a part of the next conversations, but Coach Smith, along with my parents, found a solution to be able to have kind of a little bit of a tutor that worked with, that was teaching at Northwood. And so I kind of went to Northwood / had a tutor at night, Steve Reed, who was amazing. So took my classes that I needed to graduate from there. And then went back in the spring to Chote after the season was done and had a chance to graduate there.
See, what an awesome story. I knew there'd be a good story there. Steve Reed, by the way, for those that don't know, legendary hockey figure, whether it's on the men's side or the women's side. And there's one for that Julie doesn't know. His roommate at Bowdoin College is a guy named Ken Martin. Ken Martin has 707 career wins as the head coach at Belmont Hill. And all those former Harvard hockey players that came from Belmont Hill, they all were coached by Ken Martin. So I think that's a cool part of the story for you, Julie, to know because of your attention, your attraction with Harvard. I got to ask you, you could have gone anywhere. Why'd you pick Harvard?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it was important for me to stay a bit closer to home, at least within drive versus going out to the Midwest. That was important to me. And then ultimately, I took visits at different schools and a lot of great institutions. But taking a visit was important because the environment, the culture, and the feeling I got in an environment was really the driver. And obviously, I wanted to go to an Ivy League. So academics are important. But when I got a chance to visit there, I really loved it. I loved the team environment. I loved the culture. I loved how in season they were connected. But then I went back and visited out of season. And out of season, they were just as connected. And the opportunity to, you know, throw out team activities together where everyone was invited didn't necessarily have to go because everyone's season, out of season, everyone's kind of on their own pages to some extent. But I think that invitation for everyone being welcome to join was what was really important to me, is having a place where people feel like they could belong. So after that visit, I remember I really loved it. And it was really about the people and the culture and how I was going to be able to develop in that environment. And a lot of what I learned at Harvard in regard to team first and in regards to expectations and standards and culture driving our success is what I've brought now to other parts of my life, to my family life, to my friend's life, and to my life here at Concordia.
That's an awesome story. I got to make sure I remember this right, Julie. I think in 2002, did you defer and not go to Harvard for the Olympics in Salt Lake City? I think I remember that.
Yes. So in 2000, 2001 was my first year on the national team, the residency in Lake Placid. 2001, 2002 was my first Olympic year. So I was supposed to go to Harvard during that year. And then I deferred. And then when I finished in 2002, then I went the following year. 2002, 2003 was my first year. And I actually got a chance my first year to play with Hockey Hall of Famer now, Jennifer Bottrell. I was a center for a while, but when you go to Harvard and you play with her, you become a winger. And so she was my center there, and absolutely unbelievable. So like to watch and to get a chance to see her success since Harvard has been incredible. Like I watched from afar what she does as a commentator. But so what an incredible athlete. I think early on, she was one of the really tremendous 200-foot players, thought the game really well, obviously skilled and talented. She moved really well on the ice, but just saw the game and at such a high level. And I think that I learned a lot from her. And I always say I really loved playing with her, and I grew a lot in that 1 year, unfortunately only 1 year at Harvard with her.
You know, it's pretty neat. There are five women that have won the Patty Kazmaier, which is like the Hobie Baker, the Heisman Trophy of women's hockey, the best female player in college. You're one of five. Jennifer won it twice. She's the only female that's ever won it twice. Why so many Harvard women winning the Patty Kazmaier?
Yeah, I think especially during that time, there was such a great flux and chunk of players that got an opportunity to go and to be surrounded by an awesome culture. And, you know, I think when you're in a good place and yes, like you have some sick, like you have a good support system around, some good things happen. And so I think we just happened to be in a really great environment. And, you know, they had Angela Ruggiero, AJ Malesko, Sarah Vaillancourt that also won that. And just tremendous people that worked hard and really dug in. So I was lucky to play with AJ on the Olympic team. 2002, with Jen, with Angela, as well as Sarah Vaillancourt. So just, you know, when you're surrounded by those types of people, then it helps me improve. And at the end of the day, when I ended up winning, I knew I just gave the puck to Sarah and she was going to score. So it made me look good on that final year.
Okay, now I want to make you look even better. This is because I care about women's hockey. And this is for our audience out there. In 2005, something happened in Linköping, Sweden. You were a part of it. It's the Americans beat the Canadians in the gold medal game. And this is for everybody at home. I remember watching Julie play, Angela, Haley Wickenheiser for the Canadians, Jen Bottrell. It was a murderer's row of players on both sides. It was unbelievable. It's the only game, Julie, and I don't know if you remember this. It's the only championship game ever that's been decided where the team that lost never gave up a 5-on-5 goal the entire tournament. It was an unbelievable. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was for Canada. So, yeah. It was the case. And, it was a shootout, actually. I remember it was our first world championship ever winning after, you know, 15 years. So it was about time. But, yeah, that was a tremendous game. It was back and forth. It was a battle. But I remember that stat. It's pretty wild.
I did that tournament that year because of the hockey lockout on the NHL side. So I had spent 2 months in Europe, and we sandwiched the women's world championships between the boys under 18 and the men's world championships were in Innsbruck and Vienna. So it was such a treat to be there and watch the competition, how intense it was setting up for the 06 Olympics that you were a very big participant in Torino. How hard was that loss in 06?
I think 06 was, but if I'm going to peel back and be honest, like Canada was better that time, right? Like you can, as coaches, right? Like you can kind of look and you can step back, and maybe that's why I'm a coach. We weren't running at our best at that point. Like we weren't at a point where, like even leading up to that, they had been beating us nearly every single, it wasn't a rivalry game then, but every pre-Olympic game. And so I think like when we got there, we weren't quite clicking the way we did. And for different reasons, right? I think there's a lot of different reasons. One, like Cammy Granato wasn't on the team. That was a hole in leadership. Mm-hmm. We didn't have issues on the team. Honestly, the team got along really well. But I think there was just pieces. Sometimes it just doesn't quite fall into place. And so I think if anything, what's hard in 2006 is that we got to the end and we weren't quite where we needed to be. And that's on all of us, right? Whether it's, and I take a lot of ownership as a player. Like I'm always a believer that players control so much of that. So what could I have done better as a leader, as a player? What could we as an organization have done in the structure of how we did? And 2006 was a different one for us. And obviously we lost in a shootout to Sweden and Kim Martin, who's unbelievable. And I got a coach later on at Minnesota Duluth, stood on her head as well. And there's some great iconic players from that Swedish team that did a great job. So I never want to take away from what they've done also, because yeah, they deserve their flowers of what they were able to do as well.
I marvel that you remember Kim Martine, and I'll tell you why I bring it up. 2 weeks ago, I was speaking at a IIHF convention over in Ireland, and Kim Martine was there representing the Swedish delegation. And I brought that game up to her, not knowing I was ever going to be speaking to you on this show of ECEC decision makers. The fact, Julie, that you remember that is awesome. It's so good. It's one of the most memorable goalie performances I've ever seen in women's hockey. And and I said this to Kim in front of this room full of people, there are probably 500 people there. I said, it reminded me of 1972, Ken Dryden in game 6 and game 8 against the Russians in the Super Series. That's how good she was. And it was amazing because it's the first and only time we've never had Canada and the U.S. in a gold medal game in the Olympics. It was unbelievable. So you remember that. That's good.
Yeah, for sure. Like, obviously, we still wanted to win, and you still believe that you can in the end. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen. And so then we had to shift focus and, you know, get a chance to earn a bronze medal that year still. So I think every time you play hockey and every time you step into different scenarios, you have a choice to kind of see and make the most of what's in front of you still. And, you know, sometimes you learn hard lessons. Sometimes you have awesome lessons, everything in between. But I think it shapes us for who we are, and it prepares us for life, and it allows us to be more resilient in the things that we experience.
What did Harvard help you learn that helped you become a good coach? Because I know how good a coach you are.
I appreciate that. You know, honestly, it's the culture. When I first got there, like, they have a culture of team first. And it's funny because everyone likes to use catchphrases and that sound good, right? But when I was there, for sure, the coaches like introduced it to me. But it was the players that really spoke about it, and they lived it. And I saw it. I saw players that would just own their roles. I saw players that worked hard every day, that put in the effort, put in the time, and gave everything for our team to be successful, whether they played a lot or they didn't. And the times was a little different, right? Our fourth line didn't touch the ice. It's just like it was just a different, but they had so much value. I remember one game, you know, it was in my junior year. We went into 3 overtimes in the quarterfinals, and we were on gas at this point. And I come back and I'm like hands between my head between my legs, and I'm dying. And one of our teammates comes in and she goes, "You got this." And meanwhile, she hadn't played in like probably the whole game. And she was invested and she was energized and she found a way to give. And that stuck with me. So now I've brought that like here to Concordia. I bring it into our everyday life. And I think it's a way, what I learned is everyone on our team has value and everyone has the ability to contribute to our success. And I think that's what I learned from that environment. Because now when we have players, you're going to have players that are in and out of the lineups. You have our third goaltender. You have the top players that play in every scenario. But how do you make sure that every single player feels valued and knows that they contribute and know that they're going to be loved and supported? And that's what I felt when I was at Harvard. And I hope that I can continue that path and sharing it with my players here. But then it's not just hockey. I tell our players, hockey is where we get it to live in our environment here. But you're going to live it in your work environments and your family environments, because everyone's going to have a different role and a different, you know, thing that they contribute to whatever space they're in. So I think that's something like really, really valuable that I learned, and something that stuck with me and has shaped the way I interact with people, shaped the way I try to coach and treat all the players on my team, not just, you know, the players that are putting the pucks away, but, you know, everyone. It's how I pick up pucks at the end of practice, because why should it be a incoming player, a young player? I'm by the puck bucket and we got to pick up pucks. Sure, let's do this. But you set that standard and I think others will follow too. And it doesn't become, oh, wow, like she's picking up pucks. She says, no, she's picking up pucks. Yeah, okay. It's more like that. And then I think the second fold is Coach Stone also knew that I love to coach. And I thought the game, I always liked to, I was a thinker of the game. So I always was that. Vision was my strength. And so like, I remember there were times where she would talk me through certain decisions. And just like, hey, like, this is why, like, we decided this. And like, when I was like, oh, okay, this makes a lot of sense. And there was always that open communication to understanding about the teaching side.
For 16 years, I worked for NBC Sports and they had a slogan, must see TV. Must see TV at the Olympics are the American women versus the Canadian women. It didn't work out in 06, but it worked out in 98, it worked out in 02, it worked out in 10, and it worked out in 14, and it really worked out in Pyeongchang in 18. You weren't there, but I'm sure you were watching. But here's what I got for you. In 2010, it was really the coming out party of Marie-Philippe Poulin. How good a player is Marie-Philippe Poulin?
Who's incredible. And it's fun because she's a great friend of mine now, being up here. But yeah, she's absolutely unbelievable. You know, I think what you see is obviously this talented player that can shoot, can score, but she tries to play a 200-foot game. Like, she'll block shots, she'll give that extra. But what a lot of people don't see, because they don't see the everyday process that she goes through, she works for everything she gets. Yes, she's talented. Yes, she had some abilities. All of us need that. Like, we're not in this utopia. But she took all those talents and she elevated it to be one of the best players, female players, probably ever play the game. And she did that because of her consistent effort and her desire to want to get better every single day, regardless if she scored big game winning goals in nearly every Olympics or big world championships, regardless if she's a household name and kids are looking up to her every moment. Like, we'll do some skills sometimes together. Like, she'll hop on every so often with us, like mostly with others. But when she does, like, I always tell my players, I say, hey, watch how she does this simple drill. Mm-hmm. And the intensity of that one rep on a random Tuesday night is unreal in the middle of July. And that's why she's as good as she is, because it doesn't matter what day it is, what time of day it is, who she's skating with. If she's going to go on a rep, she's going to do it to the highest intensity. And I think her and Laura are a great compliment for that, because Laura does the exact same thing. Like, Laura Stacey, like her wife, does the exact same thing and pushes. And it's a really cool compliment to see.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. It's phenomenal to watch. I watch a lot of hockey games, men's games, women's games, prep school games, college games, you name it. I usually watch them. I find the PWHL to be phenomenal right now because of the physicality part of it. Are you a buyer because of that, or is there something I'm missing? I think the game's evolved unbelievably for the women.
Yeah, so I am. Like, if you would have asked me maybe 10 years ago, I probably would have said no. But I do think now, like, just because of the preparation, the ability to have skills, the, you know, the physical nature of the game that has evolved into that because of, you know, general, like, growth of the game and growth of strength and conditioning and resources, the game was already really physical, right? When I was leaving, even though there wasn't full checking, I remember sometimes, like, our coach playing games, like, Chewy, because I was one of the captains, can you go talk to the referee and let him know it's not a full checking game? I was like, yes, I'm going to figure out how to, like, phrase this to the ref, right? But I actually really like it. I think that it's an exciting element. I think they're still early on in this process of trying to figure out what is actually a hit and what's not, what's allowed or not. And that's still, for me as a fan, seems a little bit of the unknown. And I think even for players. So once they really hone in on that, sometimes it's just the process, right? You kind of go through lots of video, lots of just repetition. Then there's a better understanding of what is allowed, what's not. But I do like the idea that there's not necessarily the open ice, they're coming across and I'm going to try to take your head off. I don't think our game needs to get there, but I do like the idea of, like, being in the same direction, having some good stand-up hockey, being physical on those boards, because that's been happening for a while. Now you can just give a little extra sugar to it.
I love that. I think that's so appropriate. One of the cool parts about coaching, and I still do it, you work with young players and you see them evolve and become good. So last night I got a call from a friend of mine whose daughter that I coached since she's been 5 years old. She's a Harvard graduate, Mia Biotti. Yeah. She just signed with the Boston Fleet. And I got that call, and it was just like when I got the call that my son was signed by the Minnesota Wild. You know, when he got signed to a pro club, I'm saying, like, this is so awesome that women actually have a chance to do this now.
Yeah.
And I know you played professionally, but don't you think it's evolved a lot more since when you started?
Absolutely. Like, when I started, this, my first time playing hockey was in 1990. So there was, like, one or two girls you saw at the rink throughout the entire season, right? I grew up in Connecticut playing. So you play with the boys, and I was really, really blessed. I played and grew up at the Wonderland of Ice in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Chris Drury, the Drury brothers.
Don't worry. I know where it is.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so, but, you know, the Fergusons that were there, Lisa Fedek, like, unbelievable people, like, salt of the earth people. They still created a great environment so that when I came and the only girl playing at a time where people are like, oh, girls playing, like, I always felt welcomed. Like, people, I know some have had these, like, horror stories, right? Like, oh man, like, I wasn't welcome. People were mean. I was like, not really. Like, yeah, you'd have a kid that would, like, make a joke and sneeze because my last name was Chew. I was like, if I can't be tough for that, then like, I got to figure this out. Right. If anything, it was like the parents that were a bit nastier, but that's another story. But it's evolved so much because I think each Olympics, we saw a huge jolt in growth of girls hockey. And this is, that goes back to the whole conversation of when you have exposure, like what comes first, but anytime they exposed like people to the Olympics and you saw that sport, the growth was 6, 8, 10% and the growth of girls participating. And that's for a 2.5 week period, right? So just imagine we have more consistency in that. And we're seeing that in women's sports now. And that's what's exciting. It's exploding. Like the WNBA, the NWSL, like our, like all these different places are starting to explode because there's more visibility. Social media is helping because now there's more access in other ways that's not just television too, like these podcasts, different things. And that now has launched it. So I think that launched the growth of girls. So now there's more girls, more resources get put in, but the level of hockey now is unreal. Like what people are able to do at the younger ages and the skill set of the game, compared to like when I was playing, I was like, man, I wouldn't even be like considered for any of these teams.
Oh, yes, you would. Oh, yeah. Just slow down.
It's fun. And as you said, the PWHL, getting to watch them play, we're in Montreal. So La Victoire is our team. We're your season ticket holders, got a chance to watch, bring my daughters there, although they're kind of more slushies than watching hockey right now. They're young. But we're in there and it's now like when we talk about La Victoire, I'm talking about, yeah, like our team, like I'm using our and we, and I'm not even like a, like I'm not actually coaching or associated with it. Minus I can be a fan of it and feel like I'm the community of La Victoire. And I think that's pretty special.
That is. That's awesome. That's a great story. I love hearing that. How much do you follow the ECAC anymore? Do you still follow it?
Yeah, from afar, you know, because we still have friends that coach within the ECAC. You have players that, whether you recruited them or not, that are there, like people that you know. So you try to keep an eye out and it's fun. I think, again, although like I'm coaching up in Canada at U Sports with Concordia, like I still keep an eye out on what's happening in the NCAA because it's women's hockey and we want to support women's hockey. We want to support and know what's going on in our game at different levels and different leagues. And so I'm a big believer in that. I don't have to just be in my silo, but I want to root for players that are playing on other teams that I know. I want to see how a place in a league like the ECAC that helped shape me, helped develop me. Like I loved my experience. And, you know, I was challenged like in a lot of different ways. Like Dartmouth College was really good at that time too. So we went head to head with them. Jillian Apps and a bunch of those players.
Sherry Piper, don't forget Sherry.
Yeah, that's, I shouldn't have, like Jillian Apps, Sherry, but it started going and my mind went blank. But yes, Sherry Piper, because we all went in at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was fun. We would have some really great battles and it was an exciting time.
You know, it's so cool that you remember those things and you bring them up. In my wildest dreams, I never thought I'd see a women's bean pot. And we have one.
Yeah.
And coming up this late December, I'm actually heading back to Ireland to go help run the Women's Friendship Four tournament, which is amazing. You know, when you think about it. Harvard and Union are two ECAC schools that will be in it this year, which is kind of neat. And, you know, I look at it and like in my wild and back in the day, and AJ could tell you this, when I was coaching at Babson College, back in the early, in the mid 1980s, we ran one of the largest women's hockey schools in North America. We had over 800 women a summer go through that camp. And it was unbelievable. And the best young player we had at that time was AJ Malesko. And she was maybe 9 or 10 years old at the time. And I never in my wildest dreams thought I'd ever see women's hockey here. And it's so good for the game. It's amazing for the game, Julie. And you've been a big part of that, a huge part.
Yeah, like, and I always say it because some people now say, hey, do you get jealous of what they have in the PWHL? And I was like, yeah, there's a part of you that's like, oh man, I wish I had that. That's awesome. But then I think back, I go, I still had it really good. Like I had a lot of awesome things. And I think about the women that came before me and what they had too, right? Like we always are hopefully raising the ceiling so that the next generation's standing on, like our ceiling is their floor. Like that's really what you're hoping for. And you know, those that came before that didn't even make the first 1998 Olympic team, right? Yeah. Those players are pretty awesome and special, right? And it's those that created a foundation and maybe not are now not that we're all household names, but like are not as recognized. Like couldn't have been where we are today without them. So I always say, no, I'm lucky. And now I get to be still part of the game in a different capacity.
I appreciate it, all this time you've given us. I just have a couple more for you.
Yes.
I remember, Julie, how hard it was after the 2014 gold medal game. You can ask Megan Duggan. I had to interview her after the game. It wasn't easy. It was really hard. But what I do remember after that is how you celebrated being the flag bearer for Team USA. Hard to do. But you never would have known it. The pride you showed that day was amazing. How hard was it for you to reconcile what had happened to you on the ice and then carry the flag into the closing ceremony?
Yeah, you know, I think by the time I got to the closing ceremony, thankfully, there's a few days gap there. We were in a better spot as a team, and I was in a bit of a better spot. But yeah, for sure. So she took a bit of peace out of me. But at the same time, you know, I learned so much. And if anything, like, the hardest day was the day after, because when you're at the Olympics, as you know, like, the great part of the Olympics is there's a lot of media coverage. The hard part is when you lose, you have to still do the media coverage when you're trying to still, be a little bit heartbroken about the goal that you weren't able to achieve in the end. You didn't go to bed really until like 2-3 in the morning, and we wake up at like, you know, 8, and then we have to go on a media tour. And the first one we had, there was like 6 of us in it, and we were all bawling still. And this person was probably like, man, this is a hot mess. And so we all did the same day together, probably like 4 or 5 hours. But then I remember when I found out about it was a bit later. And so we were on our last, like one of our last interviews. And now, like, we're standing there and we're all kind of in a little semicircle. The camera's set up, and and by this, like, we're actually okay now, because we just like cried for 4 hours, and now like we're in okay spot. And the guy was standing interviewing, normal, you know, post gold medal one. And then suddenly I see someone come next to him and start to whisper in his ear. And usually sometimes you're like, is this like something that's coming out? And now we're going to be put on live television, like put on the spot. And basically he said, hey, I just actually found out. And we're all like, is it good? Is it bad? That you were just named as the US flag bearer. And mm-hmm. So that's how I found out, was on a media interview the day after a gold medal game. And my teammates were there and they got to cheer. And it was pretty cool. I never really dreamed of being a flag bearer. I always thought it was cool, but it just seemed like out of my control to get a chance to do that. And I have Casey Bellamy and Kendall Coyne, thanks for that, because they nominated me. And ultimately in our process for the U.S. is that, like, you get nominated by someone in like the athlete group, and then the captains all vote on it. And they decide, like, you know, from all the different sports, who they want to be the closing ceremony flag bearer.
Yeah, I watched it. I thought it was special. Congratulations on that. Not too many people have that honor. It's an amazing honor. So now I'm going to put you on the spot. Ça va bien en français? Tu parles en français maintenant?
Ouais, peut-être parler un peu français.
C'est parfait. Félicitations, c'est beau ça.
Merci. Quand j'ai arrivé ici à Montréal, je ne parle pas en français. Mais maintenant, un peu de français, dépendant de la journée.
C'est ça, c'est mieux. Tu parles bien français.
Ouais.
Incroyable, c'est beau ça. That's good. So, just so everybody knows, where Julie lives in Montreal, and I won't give away the address, is right down the street from where I went to school from 3rd grade to 10th grade before I left because of sports. Yeah. But I know her neighborhood really well. It's kind of neat. And there's some Anglophones there. There's some Francophones there. There's a lot of everything there right now. But it's so great that you're there and you're doing such a good thing for hockey in Canada, especially with the U Sports. But the ECAC is so proud to have you as an ambassador. You've been such an amazing ambassador around the world. Thank you, Julie.
Thanks so much, Pierre. I really appreciate it. And what you're doing to highlight the ECAC, right? Love my experience at Harvard. Got a coach at Union as well. A lot of great opportunities.
This has been another edition of ECAC Hockey Decision Makers, 4-time Olympian, Julie Chu. Thank you.